Okay. Then it may be strange for some of you to hear this story, but I do recall many years ago, maybe after I'd been in Perth 1 or 2 years, it was about 19 years ago now, I remember giving a talk on a Friday night in our old centre in North Perth. It was only a small room, but as I was giving the talk, most of the people in that room walked out. It was a hopeless talk, and I knew it was a terrible discourse which I gave. And after that, it was only the very few, very, very kind friends, and also those who were deaf, who carried on listening to the talk. I remember afterwards I was thinking, oh, this is hopeless. Sort of, I'll never be able to give a talk. And I thought I'd spend my whole life just being this marvelous meditating monk, just living alone, not being bothered by people. I should have really quit while I was ahead. But instead I persisted and started giving talks, and now many people come to listen to them. But the reason I tell that story is just that to show that sometimes that when we think things are hopeless, we get just totally disappointed, we think there's nothing can be done. It's amazing just how things change with just persistence, with effort, with the sustaining of your intention, your goal to actually do something good. So this evening's talk is going to be about hopelessness and the end of hopelessness. And the reason, main reason I'm giving this talk is because I was desperately seeking for something to talk about this evening when somebody reminded me about an election which happened recently, and they were feeling very hopeless and depressed. As many people are, but many people obviously feeling very happy. But this talk is especially for those people who are feeling hopeless or disappointed. And not just for that, but for many other things which happen in life. Sometimes it is as if that all our expectations, all the things we work really hard for, all come to nothing. And at that moment, our life seems hopeless. Just we wonder sometimes, what's the point? We get this feeling of intense disappointment, hopelessness. And of course, when people get to those situations, that sometimes they either get depressed, suicidal even, or sometimes they just get angry and just they take out their hopelessness on others. You can see that in many parts of our world where nations or even like monks feel it's so hopeless because you ask people to turn off their mobile phones and it never works. Oh, I'm going to go and kill myself. But sometimes people actually get that negative attitude. They want to destroy themselves or destroy others. And you see that in some societies where hopelessness breeds violence, and breeds terrorism, breeds wars, and breeds all sorts of other terrible social ills. But in particular, you can see that happening oneself. That when that hopelessness gets very, very strong, we're liable to do some very, very unskillful, unhelpful, violent things in this world. So, what is going on there? And how can we transcend this feeling of hopelessness, which will come from time to time in all of our lives? Of course, going back to that original story, just when I gave this really terrible talk and everybody sort of left, you did feel hopeless at that time. But one of the things which always keeps you going as a monk is this beautiful teaching, which is certainly central to Buddhism, but which is obvious to all other parts of life and all other teachings of life. This wonderful teaching of impermanence, anicca, that things are always changing. They never stay the same. Things are always moving. And because they're always moving, we know that this too will pass. As we said in that book, actually in that book of Opening the Door of the Heart, the original story of this too will pass had to be taken out and we put a new one in because it was too close to another story which was published in another book. And that original story is pertinent here. It's not in the book. It was a story, of very similar, but the story of the emperor, the young man who was always depressed when things went wrong. And when he was depressed when things went wrong, he'd stay in his room and he would sulk. He wouldn't do anything. And of course, very often you see that when people have the feeling of hopelessness, disappointment, they tend not to do anything when there's something to be done. They miss opportunities. They sulk. They get disappointed. And of course, because of that, the bad times in that kingdom for the emperor lasted longer. When things went badly, he just didn't do anything. And because of that, the bad times lasted exceedingly long. But part of hopelessness is actually not realizing just what happens when things go well. When things go well, we tend to take it for granted. And because we take it for granted, just like that emperor in the story, the emperor, when things were going well, would have parties and celebrations. And because, again, he wasn't working, the good times never lasted very long. And all it needed was the ministers, the king's advisors, to meet together, and they decided to present him with this ring. It's called the emperor's ring. And the only special thing about that ring was on the outside was inscribed the words, "This too will pass." And those words helped him throughout his life. When things were going badly for him, he'd always never get to the feeling of desperation, because he knew no matter how bad it got, this too will pass. And that gave him hope. And hope gave him motivation to put forth effort and energy instead of sulking still, to do his job. And because of that hope and the energy which came from it, knowing that this too will pass, he worked hard even in the desperate times. And of course, the things did pass very quickly. And when things were going well, instead of having parties, it would continue to work. Because he remembered, even in the good times, this too will pass. You cannot take those good times for granted. You still have to be active to maintain that goodness, that health, that prosperity, that happiness, as long as you possibly can. And so because this too will pass, even in the good times, he worked hard. And of course, the good times lasted longer than usual. He became a very successful and very well-loved emperor. And of course, you can see the moral of that story. Sometimes we do get depressed. Sometimes we do get disappointed. Sometimes our expectations do get frustrated. But when you remember this too will pass, you will never give up. You will keep on, because you know the situation which is blocking you at the moment will eventually change. And when it does, all your hard work will come to fruition. Whenever you're planting a garden, it takes years for those seeds to grow. Even some of the trees we planted at our monastery in Serpentine, I will never see them when they're fully grown trees. But nevertheless, I'm very glad to have planted them, to have watered them, and seen them grow into seedlings. That is enough to give me hope. To know that you are putting forth that effort for something good in the future, even though you may not see its fruition, you know it will eventually come. Hopelessness disappears when you understand this too will pass, and you understand this beautiful cause and effect. So whenever we get desperate, whenever we get upset, whenever we get a feeling of hopelessness, we should always put that words into our mind. This too will pass. It won't be the same. And just like you, just like me, just like anybody living in this world, there are times when it feels just it's really hopeless. Things are really going all wrong. It's one of those days again. Do you ever say that when things are going wrong? It's one of those days again. I shouldn't have got up out of bed this morning. Sometimes you get up on the wrong side of your bed in the morning. Monks never do that because we don't sleep on beds. I get up on the wrong side of my mat, sleep on the floor sometimes in the morning. But for every time you get up on the wrong side of the bed and it's a rotten morning,
There's many other mornings when you get up on the right side of the bed, when things are well. Now please keep those in mind as well. And then we don't lose hope. Sometimes it's just the focusing on all the faults and things which go wrong in the world, which create this illusion of hopelessness, this feeling of depression and disappointment. Too often, the depression, disappointment, frustration, lack of hope, again comes from focusing on only one part. It's just too easy to think, oh, now Mr. Bush is in the White House. Oh, now Mr. Howard is sort of elected in Canberra. Oh, this, whatever else you say, oh, that you think that it's hopeless and it's terrible. But you all know that life goes on. There's always something good happens when there's something bad. One of the fundamental teachings of Buddhism, which I like because it's actually outside of my tradition, it comes from Mahayana, that everybody's got Buddha nature. There's always something good in everybody. When you get really hopeless and depressed, you think, oh, Mr. Bush is nothing good in him. Oh, Mr. Howard is nothing good in him. Oh, my husband, he's even worse than Mr. Bush. Oh, my wife, he's worse than Mrs. Howard. I don't even know Mrs. Howard, but, you know, I'm sure she's a very nice lady. But the point is that we can always just focus on the negativity, and in Buddhism we say everything's got Buddha nature, everything we can learn from. We can make something out of it, out of adversity. Now this is perhaps of all of the strategies to deal with disappointment, frustration, the feeling of hopelessness. When you understand that strategy, there's always something you can do. There's no such thing as hopelessness. I don't know the meaning of the word hopelessness. The word doesn't exist. It's only an illusion. It's a sort of a one way of looking at things. It's a distorted perception. It's a blindness. There's always hope. There's always something we can do, no matter what we're experiencing. I tell this to the children who are about to face their TEE exams. So many children are going to get their results, and many of them are going to come bottom. Someone has to come bottom. Not everyone can get into university. Many are going to get very, very disappointed. There's something you can do about that. You don't need to feel life is hopeless. In fact, I've been telling children who've been coming to my monastery for the last couple of weeks, because they've been very afraid about their exams. I say, listen, if you fail your exam, great. Now you don't have to do any more exams anymore. But those people who pass the exams are going to go to university and do more exams. Or they're going to have so much hard work. Now you're free. You're so lucky if you fail your TE. I get into big trouble with the parents, but the children love me. Because you have to keep on taking exams until you fail one. And when you fail one, then you can stop. You might as well get it over and done with sooner than later. So big deal. So the point is, it's not hopeless. And many, look at the monk sitting next to me here. He failed his TE. And what a fine example of a young man that is, wearing robes. He didn't even take his TE. Instead, he became this amazing chef. And so he's very welcome in our monastery. So the point is that it's not hopeless when you feel that there's always something else you can do with what you have. Well, of course, there's a talk which I gave at Curtin. When one door shuts, there's always another door opening. And that's what you have to find. So it's never hopeless. Sometimes we feel that, you know, despite what Ajahn Brahm says, that sometimes my problems, my difficulties, my pain, my imminent death is so great that it is hopeless. It's not hopeless. Even when you're dying, that's a great time to become enlightened. So never throw away your imminent death. It's a wonderful opportunity. For example, if you're dying, you get free access to Ajahn Brahm. I'll go there straight away.
And it's a great time actually to contemplate that what's really happening in life. Too often that we are quite heedless. We take things for granted, but when pain, disappointment, imminent death, bankruptcy, sort of cancers, family sort of falling apart, whatever happens, now that's a wonderful time in your life. At that moment it may not seem it, but when you understand that it has got this Buddha nature, this sense that there's something in there which you can learn from, which you can grow from, which you can make use of to become a better person, then you understand what we mean, that nothing is hopeless. Just like every being has got Buddha nature according to the Mahayana teachings. Every person has got an aspect of goodness inside of them. In the same way that every situation has got something beautiful which we can use. Like a jewel wrapped into a dirty cloth. If we unwrap the cloth and go to the jewel inside, there's always something we can find which is valuable, which is so useful for us. As it says in the old Buddhist suttas, it's the most beautiful lotuses. They grow out of the mud. It's as if in that mud is the seed of this beautiful pure lotus. In the same way, in the mud of our lives, in the sort of the dirty, pulpy, smelly manure of what happens to us, a lotus can grow. A beautiful, pure, fragrant, wonderful flower. So understanding there is always that possibility there. There's no such thing as hopelessness. It's just another opportunity. It may be a tough opportunity, but still, it's an opportunity to learn and to grow. I'm not quite sure if I said this last week. If I have, please interrupt me, but I said this at a talk recently at Curtin University. I was there last Wednesday. I recall this occasion when a woman came up to me in Malaysia. She wanted some personal counselling because she had been raped. Did I tell that story last week? No, okay. She had been raped and she came to see me for some help. What would you do? Of course, as a monk, you look at her very quickly and to see just how her mind is, whether she is ready for some deep teachings or ordinary teachings. I realized straight away that this woman was quite advanced in her wisdom, in her ability to see a deeper level of that experience. And so straight away I looked her in the eye and said, "You're very fortunate to have been raped." To which she was surprised, but interested, because she'd never heard that before. Now, of course, it's difficult for me to say that, but I know what I was doing. And I explained. Said, "That's an opportunity for you. It's a terrible thing which has happened. And of course, I don't approve of it in any which way. But it's there. It's happened. I really think that you can grow from that. You can learn from that. That you can actually make use of that. And when you've actually made use of that, grown from that, and transcended that terrible experience of abuse, then you will be able to be the one who can help other people through those experiences in a way which I, as a monk, as a male, will never be able to do. There's a chance there for you. It's a tough door which is opening for you." But I thought that lady was courageous and strong enough to take it. I haven't seen her for a while, but I hope she has taken that door. Instead of being a victim, instead of denying, instead of thinking it's a terrible thing which has happened, instead of losing hope for her future, she can incorporate that in to her spiritual life. It's the old simile of the truckload of dung. The more dung, the better the fertilizer, the more you can grow in the garden, the spiritual garden of your heart. I love saying things which people don't expect, which challenge them, which make them see things in a different way.
Because one of the reasons that woman came to me for counseling, because she'd obviously been to all the other counselors. She probably hadn't got any money left, so that's why she came to the monk. Because we never charge, as they say. But obviously nothing had worked, that's why she came. And so sometimes you actually change the words to suit the person. And I think I hit the spot. By the reaction of that woman, I think she understood what she should do and how she should proceed. Instead of denying, instead of feeling guilty, instead of looking for revenge, instead of feeling hopeless, there was hope there. A challenge. A path which very few women are strong enough to actually to take. But if she could take that, I could see at the end of that path, she would be an amazing lady. So much wisdom and compassion because of what she had experienced. That has always been my attitude to what happens in life. No matter what I have to do, no matter what I experience, no matter what burdens are given to me in life, I would say, okay, let's stop complaining, let's go and do it. Do something about it. That is the potential for not getting, overwhelmed by what happens in life. Because you should know that we can't control elections, we can't control our health, we can't even control our safety and security. No matter how many burglar alarms you have in your house, still the burglars will find a way in some way or other. But actually, I will tell you, if you really want the best burglar alarm, of course, is the monks chanting. Because I said this recently when I went to a lady's house to do a blessing, and I can see them in the corner over there. And I was telling them there is the lady actually who offered Akatina last week at our monastery, that she was woken up one morning at about 4 o'clock. She thought it was her husband, who usually went to work very early, and it wasn't her husband downstairs in her house. She saw through one of the windows the head of a burglar. He was about to come in, and she shouted. And the burglar, because he wasn't all the way in yet, took his head out of the window and ran off. She'd caught him just in time, in a situation where just a shout would cause him to run off. She checked her house. No burglar had been in yet. He was about to go in. So, of course, she did what most people would do. She called the police and she alerted her neighbors, especially one neighbor who replied, said, "Look, I don't have to be afraid of burglars. I've got security screens and security shutters and alarms. I've got everything in my house. No burglar can come in here." And she told this lady, you know, who did Akatina last week, she said, "You should get all these alarms and stuff. Then the burglars could never get in your house." Because this lady never had any alarms at all. She had something else. She said, "I don't need the alarms because the monks have chanted in my house. My house is safe. And see, the burglar couldn't come in." And of course, her neighbor said, "Ah, you're just crazy, just superstitious." But when her neighbor checked her house, she found that the burglar had already been in her house. They were just coming in the next house just to get some, like, desserts, as it were. And it showed that it doesn't matter how much alarms you have, the burglars can get in the house, but if you have the chanting, oh, the burglars, they could never get in your house. But sometimes the chanting wears off, so you have to have it renewed every now and again. So the moral of that story is that sort of, you know, well, so what if they do come into your house? I remember one lady, she told me that I'd chanted in her house and somebody burgled her house. So what did they steal? They said they stole a couple of bottles of whiskey. And I said, "Excellent." I thought, that's a good Buddhist burglar. Get your whiskey out of the house. Throw it down the sink. But nevertheless, there's always something you can do with what happens. And if the burglar does come in your house, oh, they're relieving you of all these things you have to worry about. Imagine if your burglar came into the house and they stole your television. Oh, marvelous. Thank you so much, burglar. Now I can meditate instead of watching those stupid movies on TV at night. And if they stole your car, oh, wonderful, I can get a bicycle and get some exercise. I'll probably live much longer that way. Oh, thank you, burglar, for giving me the opportunity to exercise. So there's always something you could do with what you've got. So it's, again, that positivity, the way of looking, which doesn't see it as hopeless, but sees it as an opportunity. There's something you can do no matter what happens. And, of course, you know this is probably coming. Tell your children if they do fail the TEE, they can always become monks or nuns at our monasteries. That will motivate them to study like hell. But there's always something you can do with what you've got. So is it really hopeless, whatever you have to experience in life? No, it's always opportunities. When you get sick, you get cancers. If ever that happens to you when you first get diagnosed, you think, oh, my whole life has fallen apart. All my expectations have now been ruined. It hasn't fallen apart. There is something you can do. And as anyone who has actually worked with cancer, I was going about to say cancer sufferers. I shouldn't say that. Cancer experiences. It's amazing just how many people just say what a wonderful blessing that was. Painful. Just very, very uncomfortable. But teaching them a lesson. So many people have told me that they wouldn't have given up that experience for the world. It's amazing how many people have said that. It really showed them the meaning of life. And it showed them care. It just showed them how many friends they have and how wonderful that friendship could be. What real love is. Just somebody was asking me today. They wanted me to go and see a doctor. I said, no, look, I'm healthy. I said, no, please go and see a doctor. I said, okay, then I'll get sick for you. Because it's wonderful having a monk who's sick, someone who you can look after. So I'm very, very sorry I'm so healthy. I'm not sort of depriving you of the opportunity to make good karma by looking after me. I always, some of the disciples, the devotees, if a monk gets sick, oh, they're so happy. They can go and give this medicine and that medicine and all sorts of other things. There's this monk, I knew a friend in Thailand, an American monk, when he was visiting his mother in Chicago, you know how Chicago is such a cold and icy place, he slipped on the snow and broke his leg. And so he had to go to hospital. And he told me that, you know, when his mother heard the news, she rushed to the hospital, she came into the ward, he had his leg up in a plaster, and instead of, you know, his mother saying, oh, you poor thing, he said, I've never seen my mother so happy. I said, why are you smiling so much, mother? And the mother replied, because, son, now I've got you exactly where I want you. Where I can mother you for the next couple of weeks and you can't escape back to your monastery in Thailand. It's lovely to be able to look after someone who's sick. It's a privilege. And if you're sick, you're giving that privilege to others. You're giving them the opportunity to be compassionate, to be caring, in a way which sometimes we don't have the opportunity to do when people are healthy. So sometimes, if you're sick, don't think of yourself. Think of the opportunities you're giving to others to show this beautiful side of human nature called care, devotion, love. Someone who really is looking after you and caring for you. That's why that some sicknesses become such a beautiful occasion of giving. So, there's something even positive in sickness. So that's why in this temple here I've often told you there's nothing wrong with being sick. If people say it's something wrong, they're not really understanding the truth. It's natural, it's normal, it happens to everybody. Therefore, you should never say, there's something wrong with me, I'm sick. What should you say? There's something right with me, I'm sick. Some of the disciples here are great because whatever I say, they actually put into practice. I got some complaints from doctors. They say, your disciples come to my surgery. And they say, doctor, is something right with me? I'm sick. And they call the psychiatrist. No, they don't. But you get the message there. Because there's nothing wrong with being sick. There's nothing wrong with things going wrong. We do get disappointments in life. Things go wrong. They don't go according to plan. People fail exams. We crash our cars. We get divorced sometimes. We have arguments. We get sick. We have elections which go one way, elections which go other ways. Your soccer team sometimes loses. Welcome to life. This is life. The problems are that we misunderstand life. We live in delusion that things should always go in the right way. And sometimes when it doesn't go right, we've got the idea of something is not right. This is not just. We've got what we call perceptions of injustice. And that is probably the underlying cause for the anger, the angst, the frustration, even the violence which sometimes comes out when we don't get what we want. We think it's not right, it's not just that Mr. Bush is in the White House. It's not just what's happening to this group or that group. It's not just what happened to me. Why me? You know the Buddhist answer to that question, why me? Why not? Yeah, you know that one. Why not you? It's got to happen to somebody. So why not you? Maybe it's your turn now. But think, there's no cause, there's no reason, it's unjust. And I mentioned this especially in when I was at Curtin, because the main talk was on Buddhism and human rights. And human rights is always about this underlying theme of justice. And in order to get this justice in the world, we have this Bill of Rights and Declaration of Human Rights, and there's many constitutions which are supposed to safeguard this idea of justice. But what is justice? Isn't the law of karma saying that there's like a cosmic justice, an underlying fairness of life? It's only because we only see part of the picture, we don't see the whole, that we cannot see the causal connections why some people have to experience, say, cancers while some people don't, while some people are rich, while some people are poor, while some people can live in safe societies like we do, while some people can't, while some people can watch the TV at night while monks can't. What's the cause? You can see there is some fairness there. The old story which I tell, which is a classic story, it's in that book again, was the story of this prisoner who was in Karn at Prison Farm. Used to go and see him teaching meditation, this old lag, as they say, been in and out of jail for a long time. And he came and saw me, wanted a personal interview, and he said, "The crime for which I put in jail for, I did not commit. I'm innocent," he claimed. He added, he said, "I know you probably have heard that before, that all crims in jail say they're innocent, but I would not lie to you. This is true." And I believed him. Actually, I found out he was innocent. He didn't commit that crime. Is that unjust, that you go to jail for a crime you didn't do? Is that unjust? People would say that. Yes, they'd say, that's unjust. But the criminal never thought that. Because he told me afterwards, he said, "But there were so many other crimes I did I wasn't caught for. It's fair." Now do you understand about perceptions of justice and injustice? What's fair and what's unfair? Whenever you think it's not fair, this is unjust, is it the case you're seeing the full picture? Or are you just looking at only part of what's happening? Every time you get caught by the speed cameras and you think, "Oh, this is really unfair, why me?" How many times you've been speeding and there hasn't been a speed camera there? Do you ever think, "Oh, this is unfair, why did I not get caught today?" Now can you understand about justice and injustice? Too often there is a misperception of injustice, not seeing the full picture, which leads us to a sense of hopelessness and depression. What it really means is that we're out of control. Hopelessness means that we're disempowered. There's nothing we can do anymore. It's unfair. But once we see that there is an underlying cosmic justice occurring in the world, which the Buddha called the law of karma, then there's no such thing as a hopeless situation anymore. And there's always something that can be done. Sometimes the understanding the full extent of the law of karma makes it very easy to be more accepting of the way things are. Really, it's your karma to be under a government led by Mr. Howard. You deserve it. Your husband, it's your karma. You have to just enjoy it for a while. So the point is that what it really means, first of all, there's a cause there. Instead of complaining about it, we understand there is some justice, there is some fairness there in life. It's only sometimes that we're just blind to all of the underlying causes and we just judge too quickly, we don't see the full picture, and therefore we get this sense of injustice and the violence which comes from that. However, as I mentioned, I stressed at this talk about Buddhism and human rights, that's only half of the idea of karma. To understanding what we have to experience, some of the difficulties, sometimes the problems, they have got their causes, there are reasons there for it. There's no such thing as it being really unjust. Life is fair. Your health, your happiness, your freedom, your prosperity, you do deserve it. Life is fair, you've worked for that. But what's happening now, what are we doing about it? That is the other half of the law of karma. What are you experiencing now? There's been causes. It is just. But it does not mean that, oh, I've just got to sit and endure this. I've just got to sit back and endure another 4 years of this government or another 3 years of that government. I've got to endure another don't know how many years of my wife. I've got to endure this cancer. I shouldn't do anything about it. It's just my karma. I've just got to let it happen. I've got to endure sort of failing my exams. I've got to endure being a monk or whatever it is. That's not what karma is. That's fatalism. Nothing to do with Buddhism. The point is, yes, it's here. It's got its causes. It's fair. It's just. It's an opportunity for you to do something about it. Too often when people talk about karma, they just think of the karma of the past without adding the karma of the present. So what we're doing now is also very, very important. So what I meant by it's not hopelessness. If one just thought that karma from the past is going to just determine our life, we can't do anything about it because we may have hay fever because we punched a saint in the nose in our past life. Or whatever else it is you think you did. But no, it's not hopeless. There is something to be done. And that's where that we have our effort, our energy to actually to try and make a better world, to do something so we don't get depressed. We don't just sulk in the bedrooms of our mind like that emperor. This too will pass. And we put forth energy to try and build whatever we think is goodness, kindness, generosity, tolerance, harmony. We have to keep working to build that in our world. It does not matter if there are belligerent governments. We will still try and develop harmony and peace by example, by word, actually to show that that is a better way. And this is actually our duty in the world. No matter just what happens, we still work hard for our principles. We never give up. Because we know if we keep on working for that which we know is good, for that which we know is kind, for that which we know is something which is going to be useful in our world, eventually that will come. You know, I had this little theory about elections, because we had lots of elections recently. I don't know if you'll agree with this, but think about this. Why don't we have actually people of different ages having different weights for their votes? So that people who are like 60, maybe only their vote only counts for over 60, 60 and above, their vote only counts for a third. 40 and above, their vote counts for two-thirds. And so 20 and above, they get the full vote. Because really, when you think about it, if you're sort of 20, then whatever the government does, you've got to pay for that for about 60 or 70 years. As for those of you who are 60 and over, you're on the way out anyway, so it's not going to be a matter. So isn't it more important sort of that the young people have more of a say in what's going to happen because they have to live with the consequences longer than anybody else? So I really think that sort of 60s and overs, you should sort of only get a third or a quarter of the vote. 80s are over, you shouldn't get a vote at all because you're almost gone, so it's a waste of time. Do you think that's going to be a new electoral program for fairness in voting? But you can see the point of it there. It's that sometimes that, it's what the outcomes. But I was saying in Curtin the other day that one of the wonderful things about Buddhism, because we have the idea not just of karma, but reincarnation, it means that we don't have just children's rights, because they were focusing on women's rights, humans' rights, children's rights, and they said, what about all people's rights? And that's never as important or focused as children's rights. But many old people are abused. You know why? Because they think, it's a waste of resources. Why should we look after our old people? We just got that beautiful, sunset home just in Netherlands some years ago. It's a beautiful home, and the elderly people got kicked out of there because it was prime real estate. Why don't we have old people's rights? I'm very interested in old people's rights as I get older. And as a Buddhist, we do have old people's rights because they're going to come back in another life. And if we don't look after our old people, we're going to suffer when they become children in their next life. As is happening now, the problem with youth is because it's the old people we didn't look after in the last generation getting their own back. That's always it's the reason why we have delinquent youth. All those delinquent youths who do burnouts in Scarborough Beach and attack the police, they were probably those old people who were left in nursing homes to rot, and now they are taking their revenge in this life. I don't know if that's really true or not, but it's a nice thing, interesting thing to say. The point is that we do look after our old people and care for them. So when we talk of human rights, there's something that's very wonderful about the law of karma and about the law of reincarnation. It gives us a big picture. And in the big picture of things, Mr. Howard, only 3 years, Mr. Bush, 4 years, Mr. Blair, was it 5 years? It goes so quickly. When you look at the really big picture, you can actually see the whole movement of what happens in the world. If you just look at sort of small pictures, sometimes it does get quite depressing, but you actually just see some very positive and wonderful things happening in the world. Just look at this room here. Just how many people of different nations are coming together as friends. 20 years ago, you'll never find that. Look at just how we mingle together. There has been an improvement in human rights, which is just basically compassion and kindness and wisdom. There has been a lessening of intolerance and exploitation and abuse. Sure, we fight many battles and then we lose a couple, and then we fight some more. But the whole tide of history of our human race is always more compassionate, more wise, more kind. The values of the past, if you look in history, many of those values are seen as anachronistic, as harmful and hurtful, and are no longer no part of any society. There is still much more work to be done, which is good, because that stretches us. It would be terrible if there was a perfect world. If there was a perfect world, there'd be nothing to stretch us. There'd be no need for compassion. There'd be no need for wisdom. We would have no growth without the fertilizer of disappointments and things going wrong. But nevertheless, we can have that hope that this is a world which may go two steps forward and then one step back, but it's always going forward. Look at your history. See how this world has grown. Sure, there are problems, but with every problem, there are solutions. And instead of getting depressed or hopeless, instead of making the problem worse with depression, with frustration, or with violence, there's always something we can do. Again, it's planting a seed for the future. Maybe you may not see that future in this life, but maybe you'll see it in the next. Seeds of people working together and living together. Seeds of husbands and wives learning to form a family, to letting go of the selfishness and the arguments, to be able to give of themselves for something greater than the personal ego, and abandoning the self to some degree of selflessness. It's part of the Buddha's teaching of non-self, is abandoning yourself more and more and more. The more selfless you are, the happier you are. And you can see that happening in some relationships where people really do give up of themselves for us, for the community, for the nation, for the world. And that's a very, very beautiful thing. And you can see that selflessness is the root of compassion and of forgiveness. And it's, of course, the cause for great happiness and also for prosperity in our world. These are things which people see. And when they see, they get inspired. When they get inspired, they put it into practice. We do find a more harmonious world. Sure, it grows slowly, but it's growing. So there is hope in this world. There are times when one is in the middle of the dung, and it covers one and one cannot see the horizons. One cannot even see further than one's nose. But when that happens, when you're depressed, when you are swamped with the problems of life, always remember there's more than that problem. Don't just think of just a pile of dung which is covering you. Beyond that dung, there's sweet air. And eventually that dung will become the flowers. So when we get the picture of many lives, of the flow of human beings through the school of life, we understand that some lessons are hard, but there's much joy as well on the journey of life. We remember the both of them. We know this too will pass. Bad times must pass. Eventually the good times must come. When they do come, never be heedless. Otherwise the good times will not last long. So, there's no such thing in my vocabulary as hopelessness. There's always something I can do. Make use of it and never get depressed. So, don't just sit there. Do something about it. If there's nothing you can do, then just sit there. There's always something you can do. Just meditate and become a monk. So that's the talk this evening about how to deal with depression, with hopelessness, with disappointment in life. Whatever happens, whoever gets elected, who doesn't get elected, whoever wins the soccer or the footy or the cricket. I know there's a lot of Sri Lankans here. I don't know how the Sri Lankan team are doing, but it's no need to get hopeless. Sure, they lose one day, then they win the next. The ball is round. One day it flows this way, one day it goes the other way. Sometimes you have arguments, next you're in love. Sometimes you pass the exams, then you fail the exams. Sometimes you have fun, sometimes you cry. Now you're born, now you die. Here we go again, la da 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 da. So see if we can actually let all of that one go and see the big picture, and then there's always something we can do, growing the garden in our heart. So, that's the talk tonight on hopelessness. I hope you didn't think it was a hopeless talk. Okay, any questions, comments or complaints today?
I was very, very careful in this talk not to say too many bad things about Mr. Bush, otherwise the CIA might come and get me. If I disappear next week, you know that I have overstepped the mark.
Okay, any questions?
Questions, comments or complaints?
Okie dokie. So, you are speechless.
And it could mean one or two things. You're really depressed, or you thought it was a good talk.
Okay, to announcements now, Mr. President.